You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 6th, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we're already in the 40th year of an anti-government revolution, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Yeah, you mentioned that this week to me, and it kind of stunned me that the Steve Bannon, Ronald Reagan revolution is something we've been living through for 40 years. Yes. And I went, oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, that's right. There was someone who stood on a platform and waved his fist and said, government is the problem. The system must be destroyed. Everything is the fault of the system. And it must be overthrown. And that person was Ronald Wilson Reagan. Mm-hmm. And he succeeded. He succeeded because he got a hold, because his solution to the problem of government was to have markets run everything. Wealthy people run everything. Corporations run everything. And apparently there's an awful lot of money to be had if you go tell wealthy people that you would like to give them more power.
We just wrote a big check to Big Pharma for the immunizations and the tests. It's we're just going to throw money at you to fix this because government is incompetent to fix it because we've set up the government with a reality TV star in charge who doesn't know what he's doing and thinks he can magical realism this problem away.
And when you begin the predicate by the government is the problem, you have just wiped out anyone who might think you've just eliminated from the conversation anyone who thinks, well, maybe governments exist among people to help us solve the problems that we individually cannot solve. Maybe that's why you have governments. This is the disruption revolution. This is the fuck experts and people, technocrats and those assholes who think they know best, throw them all out and just let a bunch of clowns who have sort of a loose idea of what they want to do just get in there and just do stuff. And magically, somehow, it'll all work out. You don't have... Trump never had a plan. His plan was, put me in there and I'll do deals. It'll be great. Okay, well, and that's all you need. Ignore all the shit on my resume about what I'm a liar and an adulterer and a thief and a scumbag and a traitor and I run up bankruptcy bills and I've scammed poor people. Ignore all that. Ignore everything about my record that might make you think I'm lying. Just focus on the fact that all you need to do to make the revolution is do good deals. Oh, really? It's that simple? Oh, absolutely. It's so easy. You won't even believe how easy. We'll go to North Korea. We'll make great deals. We'll go to the Taliban. We'll make great deals. We'll pull out of all these crazy treaties that have gotten us all stymied and killed free enterprise. And it'll all work out great. And
you promised perfect, wonderful healthcare.
Sure. And it's coming.
At a fraction of the cost.
It's coming. Yeah. You just need to give me more power. That's the key to all revolutions is... Once they start to stumble, the answer is, well, I need more power. Obviously, I need more authority. I need to purge the government of all the disloyal people. I need to get rid of all the people who have some doubts about the direction my revolution is taking. And that's what happens.
And this idea of, we're going to cut Medicare and Medicaid, and it's in my budget in the line items that I'm going to cut Medicare and Medicaid, and... then I'm going to deny that I ever said that and know I'm only here to protect your Medicare and Medicaid. You have created a financial crisis with tax cuts for billionaires, which forces you, quote unquote, to cut Medicare and Medicaid. All of that is a Republican dream list of things to do.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is Paul that's, Ryan's budget.
That's the Bush.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's the Bush administration. That was the first Bush administration. That was the Reagan administration. That's why Republicans create deficits in order to have an excuse to cut the programs they hate. So Trump is not doing anything other than what Republican revolutionaries wanted done, shorn of all of the pretense that has anything to do with liberty or freedom or the Constitution, because they never, ever gave a shit about any of that stuff. Revolutionaries don't. They don't. Those things are impediments. Yeah. to the great cause. Those things get in the way. The whole idea that you're going to work inside the government where there's all these limitations and restrictions, you have to debate shit and you have to get 60 votes and there's all this shit you have to go through to get anything done.
Steve Bannon doesn't believe in any of that.
No, he's deconstructing the administrative state. He's getting rid of all of it so that there's a smooth, efficient transmission belt between the whims of the dear leader and the execution of policy. And there's nothing to stand in between them. And you just do that by destroying the Justice Department. You destroy the intelligence agency, the credibility of them, which was already dicey to begin with. But you simply say, and every time the revolution fails, this is straight out of fucking Animal Farm. Every time it fails, it's the system. It's a conspiracy. It's fake news. It's not because I fucked up. It's not because the whole idea is stupid and dangerous and actually puts people's lives in peril. It's no. It's all a conspiracy to make it this way. And if you just give me more authority, more power, more, if you just honor my whims more, if we just purge more disloyal people, eventually it'll all work out. And it never does. And the problem is revolutionaries never learn. They never figure out what the problem, because the answer to all questions is always going to be make a revolution, make a bigger revolution, make a better revolution. I'm in favor of all the goals of the revolutionaries on my side. I'm looking for the fine print. I'm looking for the plan to get 60 people in the Senate. I'm looking for the plan to get rid of the filibuster. I'm looking for lots of plans. And that's what has me a little freaked out, because I don't see a lot of detail. I don't see any more detail about our revolution than I saw about Reagan's revolution or Trump's revolution. Just give me authority to do stuff, get out of my way, and something, it'll all work out. And I'm not young enough or naive enough to believe that shit anymore. I would like to see the fine print. I'd like to see which parts of the car are you going to fix. I'd like to get an estimate before I give you my vehicle. And if you think me asking those questions makes me disloyal or counter-revolutionary,
or that you don't want healthcare for everybody. I mean, that's the one I
want healthcare.
Yeah,
you want babies in cages. If me simply asking those questions in a forceful way makes me the enemy, then you have just told me everything I need to know about your revolution.
You know as well as I do. We have two kids now that are going to vote for Sanders.
Yes,
and
good for
them. Totally support that. I'm probably going to vote for Warren in the Illinois primary on the 17th.
Mm-hmm. This is a primary election.
It's a primary election. I get to do what I want.
Right.
I do want, once again, to hopefully help people manage expectations when it comes to Medicare and Medicare for All. Because, and I've said this many times before, Bernie's bill phases in Medicare for All over 4 to 5 years, depending on when you get it passed and when it starts. And I am terrified by what I see online from people who believe that electing one person or passing one agenda is going to and snap everybody's got health care. That's not in the bill. That's not how a bill becomes a law. That's not how the process of getting this passed is going to end up. And it's interesting. Warren's plan, she had a whole bunch of things that she was going to do on day one to expand health insurance for people. And one of her items was, you know, Bernie's plan lowers the Medicare eligibility age to 55 in the first year.
Right.
And hers was 50. And I read that and I thought, I wonder if she's asking for more than she knows she's going to get.
Yeah.
So that she can, from that position, negotiate to what Bernie has asked for, which is 55. But we don't know what kind of a Senate we're going to have. We don't know if any of this is going to be possible.
No, we don't.
So,
or, to be fair, any of Joe Biden's plans
are going to be possible. And that's what Charlie Pierce said. Charlie Pierce says, look, Joe, your plan isn't going to pass the House and Senate any more easily than anything else. So anyway, as I said, I've given up worrying about the Democratic primary race for Lent. And I am doing postcards to voters for down ballot races, which has been so therapeutic for me because I feel like I'm really making a difference just writing to 15 or 20 voters at a time and telling them, please vote for this Supreme Court, state Supreme Court candidate. So, you know, there are things we can be doing besides obsessing about what other people are saying online. And I guess that's where I want to go with this.
I did talk to
Junior Dude today. He got his ballot. Yep. He voted for Bernie, put it in the mail. He has vote by mail. And don't you think it's interesting? I know I'm jumping all over the place here, but don't you think it's interesting that here in Illinois, we have a Democratic governor who is now putting forward a budget that provides free community college.
Oh, yeah.
For any family making under $45,000 a year, free community college. So, you know, things are happening, moving in the direction that all of us want to go.
Let me just say, I am a huge believer in community college.
Yeah.
I have attended community colleges. During my years as a workforce development genius, the key component in making the plans work, in addition to building public-private partnerships and making people work across lines and getting labor to cooperate with business owners, all of which we did, the key component was building a community college curriculum around what we wanted to do, manufacturing specifically, and then transportation, distribution, et cetera, that was in line with current industry standards. Literally, you get industry certification with your credits at the community college.
Right.
And getting them to change was a fucking nightmare. It wasn't their business model at all. They were very, very set in their ways. So, and community colleges are also capable of changing fast enough to keep up with market changes, to keep up with what business needs next week or next month. And so I think it's a huge thing. I'm a big believer in it. I don't believe community college is where people go who have no other option. I think it's a vocational track that every other country, every other industrialized country has.
That's right.
And the fact that J.B. Pritzker says, hey, let's make this free. Let's make it free to anyone below a certain income threshold.
Yeah, it's $45,000 so a year is the absolute cutoff for free. Now, there's obviously there's grants and so forth for people making more than that. But free is the $45,000 level. Now, I had a discussion with someone online about four-year colleges and how community colleges don't prepare people for four-year colleges very well. And and four-year college needs to be free and so on and so forth. And the point is that J.B. Pritzker, as I said to her, is getting through the state legislature what his budget can do. Given revenues that he has.
Yes.
And the other thing is that the need and the demand right now in Illinois is for two-year degrees, 18-month degrees that get people into a job.
Yes.
So
yes,
you're a phlebotomist. Yep. You're gonna draw blood for a living in a lab, in a hospital. Or you're going to be an HVAC person and fix air conditioning units, which can't, that's a job that cannot be outsourced. Those jobs cannot be outsourced. They can't even be outsourced to another state. If the air conditioning system's in Illinois, that's where it's got to be fixed. So those kind of programs are what a majority of people who come from modest means, they want to get into a job that pays well. And these community college positions, these things where you can get in and out in 18 months or 2 years and be employable is what's in demand. So
and or you can get your requirements out of the way cheaply. And then because you're not paying $800 a credit hour for English.
Right.
And then transfer those over to a 4-year college.
Yeah. And this person online was saying that a lot of students who do that actually ultimately fail in the 4-year college mode. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure there are people that drop out after their 2 year because the demands of the paycheck and needing a paycheck and so forth happens, you know, that it's hard to stay in college for 4 years if you don't have a supportive financial possibility for yourself. But we need to move on. There've been so many things going on this week. Brit Hume overshares His love for vinyl. Yeah, vinyl on ladies' bottoms is great.
Vinyl sexy nymphs.
You get yourself. You go. But please don't take a screenshot of your computer screen ever again, Britt Hume.
Well, you know, learn how to put it into a clipping graphic software.
It's called
and clip
cropping.
Off all the parts.
Crop that shit.
And I wanted to mention that Super Tuesday humbled the mighty.
Yeah.
As a broad topic.
Huge surprise. Yeah.
And I don't mean candidates, although Mike Bloomberg going down in flames was a delight. really. I mean, Elizabeth Warren should be put in charge of taking out Republican assholes. Really. Put her in the cabinet and she's like the button man. You know, she's okay, send in the mechanic.
All right, but I'm so tired of this already. I'm so tired of people trying to give Elizabeth Warren another job than the job she already has, the one that she wanted, which is U.S. Senator. And it was trending yesterday that people want her to be Senate Majority Leader. No. She doesn't want that job. That is a thankless job. You have to do committee assignments and you have administrative bullshit you have to deal with. And you have to make senators happy with their chairmanships that don't want to be in that chair. They want to be in another chair. And, you know, that belongs to somebody who has no vision.
Yes.
And
who's a mechanic. A Senate mechanic.
And has no ambition to change the world. You know, he wants to sit in the Senate and move seats around and cajole with his community of senators. That's fine. But it is a very administrative job. And I wouldn't want that if I were Elizabeth Warren. No. So no.
And I'm just saying that when Barack Obama talked about putting Bill Clinton in charge of explaining things.
Yes, right.
You know, the
right.
Secretary of Explaining Things.
Right.
Elizabeth Warren is extraordinarily effective at explaining things.
Yes,
She's a teacher.
She is.
She's really good at it. She's incredibly smart. And honestly, if we lived in a better universe, she would already have won the nomination.
Exactly.
And be well on her way to the White House. That is my sincere preference. Elizabeth Warren, first woman president, smart as hell, can kick ass and take names and explain what she's doing in such a way that an averagely bright 8-year-old can understand what she's doing.
And I appreciate you saying that. And I know you believe that, Drift Class. There's just a whole lot of men out there who are happy to say that today now that she's dropped out.
Oh, I know. And I know. But I'm saying over in the better universe, alternate timeline.
I'm just angry. A lot of women didn't get off the couch yesterday. I forced myself to not cry yesterday. I told you, no, I'm not going to cry. You kept checking on me and checking on me. And I just told you, fuck no, I'm not going to cry about this. And it is, I want to be angry and I'm going to continue to be angry because that's how I'm going to get shit done. And I'm going to do, as I said, postcards to voters because that's therapeutic. And I know that that's the kind of thing that your mother would want me to do. And
well, that's the thing. You know. Watching the TV yesterday, we both looked at each other and go, oh my God, that's my mom.
Elizabeth Warren being interviewed by Rachel Maddow is Drift Glass's mom, everybody.
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Down to the intonations and the sense of joy and energy is just like, wow, that just hit me hard.
Yeah.
And when I say Super Tuesday, humble the mighty, I didn't mean her. Although again, I'm not going to go off on a Mike Bloomberg track. I mean people like, let's say Hugh Hewitt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
48 hours before Joe Biden swept Super Tuesday. And to everyone's surprise, let's say.
Oh yeah.
Mr. Hewitt was swaggeringly confident in his opinion in the Washington Post that here's the title of it. Enjoy it, Joe Biden, because it won't last. Yeah. And what Biden had to do in South Carolina, because Super Tuesday hadn't happened yet, was have a smashing victory over a repudiation of Bernie Sanders and the entire field, deal a crushing blow to the hopes of every other would-be nominee, and prompt several of them to drop out. That, sir, didn't happen.
Yeah,
except
it did.
48 hours later, it did happen.
Yeah, it did.
And Hugh Hewitt does not – well, and this doesn't bother Hugh Hewitt or affect his employment in any way. Having these horribly bad takes, which really kind of runs parallel to David Brooks's horribly bad take on Bernie Sanders is Joseph Stalin.
Yeah, never Bernie ever.
It is so bad. And that's in moments like that, I really do in my own way step all the way back and go and try to look at the entire media landscape and try to deduce what machinery must be cooking along behind the scenes that continues to pay Hugh Hewitt and Michael Gerson and Joe Scarborough and David Brooks for their daily insults to our country and to their alleged profession. What is it that's going on behind the curtain that keeps these assholes employed?
Don't leave out Peter Baker.
Oh, no, let's go right to Peter Baker, shall we? Here's the exact quote.
Okay.
I try hard not to take strong positions on public issues, even in private. Much to the frustration of friends and family. For me, it's easier to stay out of the fray if I never make up my mind, even in the privacy of the kitchen or the voting booth, that one candidate is better than another, that one side is right and the other is wrong. That reporting that something is true or right and something is wrong or false is literally your job.
It literally his job to decide whether something is a lie or not. Yes. Mm-hmm.
To report on it.
Yeah.
This statement coming out of this person's pie hole at this moment is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The statement this person is making is true. That is your fucking job. And again, I look at the broad canvas of the media and I wonder, how is it? What happened to these people? What farm are they grown on that they are completely bereft of human anything? That they just sit on their little chairs and work their keyboards and come up with this insane bullshit? That it is not my job as a person working under the auspices of the First Amendment to tell the public information it needs to know, to tell them this person is lying and those lies may kill you, and this person is telling you the truth about that liar. That's not my job. My job isn't to make up. Well, then what is your job?
I don't take sides on anything.
Ever. In the kitchen.
Yeah.
In the bedroom. And in the bathroom. Wipe myself? Not. Who's to say? Wash my hands? I don't know. And I picture him.
Ethan says no. On the other hand, the CDC says yes. I don't know what to do.
I don't know why Peter Baker hasn't starved to death by now, sitting right in front of his pantry with, well, here's rat poison and here's an apple. I just don't know what to eat.
Yeah.
And just,
yeah.
I give up. And this is a person who's paid rather a substantial amount of money to write his opinions on pieces of paper.
And he's on Brian Williams' show every night.
Yeah.
He's the leadoff commentator. Yep.
It is astounding to me that at this late date, this is not the Bill Clinton administration anymore. We're a quarter of a century out of that
now.
And
let's be clear. It is racist to do this.
It is
enabling white nationalism to do this. That is at its core. What you are saying is, well, on the one hand, black people say they're oppressed and they're being prevented from voting. On the other hand, Republicans disagree. Donald Trump says Nazis are some very good people. On the other hand, Heather Heyer is dead. This is where he claims he sits.
And this is where, by extension, he is asserting that this is what journalism should be.
Right. Right.
The act of doing journalism should be it shouldn't be biased, but it is not biased to say, if you eat the rat poison, you will get sick. If you eat the apple, you will not. That is not bias. That is reporting factual information. Mm-hmm. And these people at the entire Washington press corps, for the most part, have disappeared so far up their ass. And because it's such a comfortable place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never have to be right about anything. You never have to choose anything. You never have to actually take a risk. You never have to inflect anything. You just have to blandly poop out tapioca about, well, this might be bad or it might be good. Who's to say? And at the end of the week, there's a big pile of money sitting on your desk. And I just don't know, other than the corporate media and the Republican Party, frankly, whose interests are served by torching the media, by gelding the media to the point where they don't even think that it is illegitimate to report the news.
Right. Right.
And that's
right.
I don't know where to go beyond.
But you know who isn't doing that? Sean Hannity isn't doing that.
No, he's a bold.
Sean Hannity is taking a side.
He is.
He's
not a journalist. He's an entertainer.
if the people who could look at the world and say, okay, really, this is a lie and this is true, are saying, no, I really can't make a decision like that in public because that means I am no longer a disinterested reporter. I'm actually an advocate. And 30% of America is getting their quote unquote news from somebody who says Donald Trump is God. And if you don't vote for him, you're going to hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where we are with journalism. There just isn't the people who should be telling us genuinely what is real and what isn't have left the battlefield. And that's why you have a Netroots. And that's why I had a Netroots with Bush. The people who were supposed to tell us, no, there are no WMDs.
didn't.
Failed. And paid no price.
Well, and they still aren't. And
yeah.
We know people, we go to church with people whose excuse for this is, well, I read everything. I have 7 different news sources, you know, and you know, no, you don't.
Yeah.
You have Fox News, and you have Sean Hannity on the radio, and you have Rush Limbaugh, and then you sort of peer over the transom to hear what liberals are talking about, so you can be informed.
Well, you let Geraldo Rivera be the liberal voice in your head when he's
right.
on.
And you will always find a nice, reasonable, cowardly safe house, a nice spider hole in which to hide when your lies blow up. Because all you have to do is throw up your hands and say, nobody knows anything. Everything's controversial. Everyone's to blame. All sides are awful. And that's just the safety blanket. And that going back 10 years, Blue Gal, or 15 years, if you're talking about podcasting time, burning down that lifeboat, getting rid of that security blanket, tearing it off of them and saying, no, you don't get to say both sides anymore, ever. That is now an illegitimate. You think holding an opinion is illegitimate? Holding the opinion that both sides are the same is now illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to do that anymore. That's my goal. And let me be very clear about that. My goal is to drive these people into the open, make them take a position, because these are the people who will vote for Republicans right up until everything falls apart and then throw up their hands and say, well, you know, everybody's awful. Everything's bad. No one knows what's right or wrong. Who's to say, look at me. I'm a member of a Tea Party. I'm an independent. I'm a constitutional conservative.
Right.
I had nothing to do with this. Bush who? I don't know who Bush is. Trump who? I don't know who Trump is. That's what Brother Charlie Pierce was talking about this week.
Mm.
He put up a lovely article where we got some of our inspiration for our title. The title is Trumpism is Republicanism Inflated with Poison Gas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our Never Trump friends are going to have to come to grips with this sometime. Except no, they won't.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Unless they are forced to. Unless they are given no way out. Every exit burned. Every lifeboat sunk. Then they'll have to deal with it. But as God is my witness, right now in the boat building yards, in factories all over this country, they're building another Bush off machine.
Absolutely.
They're building another Donald Trump. I never liked the tweets.
They're calling it Trumpism.
Not, yeah. Oh, and that term, which you correctly pointed out before Donald Trump was ever elected.
In August of 2016, I said, don't you dare call it Trumpism. Yeah. It is the Republican agenda that is going on. Yeah.
And when I do my duty, my public service, by actually putting on my hazmat suit and listening to conservative podcasts.
I really want some news organization to send you to one of the 3 conservative conferences.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know which one I want to go to.
Which one do you want to go to?
I want to go to the Bulwark podcast. Because they're the most self-righteous of all of them.
Yeah.
They, this last weekend, I think we might have mentioned it in passing, this last weekend was the big conference competition. There were 3 separate conferences all going out at the same time, all claiming to be the true conservative conference. And there was the CPAC convention.
And that was Trump. Trump.
That was Trump. Yeah. That was Charlie Kirk and Trump and performance art reading aloud from FBI texts and imitating intercourse on stage.
Mm-hmm.
That's CPAC. And I've been writing about CPAC since I started blogging. It's always been a shit show. It's always been an embarrassment. But our Never Trump friends remember it much more fondly than that. It used to be a glorious time of an argument. We used to joust on the field like gentlemen and ladies over ideas and Burke versus this. No, it was always a shit show because your movement has always been a fucking fraud. So CPAC is just the monster without the makeup. Then there was the Bulwark podcast staff meeting, which they renamed the Principled Conservative Conference.
Blah.
Which they held half a mile away at some shared workspace downtown in Washington, D.C., of course, because nothing happens outside of Washington, D.C. worth mentioning. And it was this all the same people. It was Charlie Sykes and Rick Wilson and Bill Kristol and all the people, all the folks. It's the people who worked for the Weekly Standard, which was gutted and destroyed once Trump came to office, that repurposed itself as the Bulwark podcast, the Bulwark Online, which gets a free hand job every week, whether they like it or not, from Brian Williams on MSNBC, which is something we never get. So, and
I don't want one.
No, I don't either. Really, I don't. And they're the most indignant and self-righteous about, but what they are. So if CPAC is the monster without the makeup, then the principled conservative Bulwark people are the people worshiping the makeup table.
Yeah, right.
They're like looking longingly at the mascara and the grease paint going, this used to be conservatism. No, it was the camouflage that the monster used to take over America and destroy it. It is the, this is not conservatism. So they're just arguing over what it really means and what principled conservative means and how much we believe in liberty. And every now and then Charlie Sykes wrings his hands and goes, was it all a lie? Was it all just a lie? I don't think so. But some people do. And then they get off on some liberal track. Well, yeah, at least we're not liberals. I mean, fuck. You know, that's at least we're not that, right? Because God knows those people are screwed up. And then there was the Michelle Malkin conference for the people who need their white supremacy straight up.
Deutschland. Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. For whom that is the be all and end all.
And wasn't and she so talking I, about camps and.
Yeah. She was talking about what it means. Why can't we stand up and question whether or not the Holocaust killed X number of people? Why can't we talk about dual loyalty?
And they're really getting off on the Muslim ban big time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a straight up white supremacist freak show.
Yeah.
For people who don't think that CPAC is white supremacist freak show enough.
Yeah.
And again, there's this tiny rump battalion of enough people to fill out a hockey team who are gathering in a hotel talking about we're the real true conservatives.
Yeah, right.
Because we believe in liberty and we believe in individual freedom. We blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you've had 40 years to pull this off. What has it got you? What's gotten you is you are living, as we said at the top of this podcast, you're living through the apotheosis of your own revolution. This is what has become of your revolution, the Reagan revolution. The government is the problem revolution. Congratulations. It was always going to go here. We have been warning you for decades that it would end up here, and now here we are. And so I do my duty, Blue Gal, to listen to these people. And by God, you will never hear the word Republican on these people's lips ever talking about their former party.
Right.
Everything is Trumpism. Everything is Trumpy and Trumpiness and Trumpness and Trumpism. And it's as if the Republican Party simply does not exist anymore. And they really believe it doesn't. They really believe that somehow Donald Trump hypnotized them and mesmerized them and overnight turned their lovely Republican, liberty-loving, deficit-hating, Burke-quoting party into this hideous, slouching beast.
Full of bigots and racists, yep.
Yeah, and they don't want to talk to anyone who will remind them that everything they believe is bullshit, and it always was, which is that's the one I want to go to. I want to be the asshole in the audience. I don't want to run on stage and say, let Derry die. Okay. I don't want to run on stage
we
and say,
have to be very careful about what we say about that too, because middle child is a radical vegan, and
well, you know what? I had a talk with middle child about that.
Oh,
and she said this is what gives vegans a bad name.
Ah, okay.
She says this kind of, and I she might have used the word bullshit. I don't know where she would learn such a thing.
Oh my goodness!
This is the kind of thing that you know, and we had a good talk about you know animal cruelty. And Ezra Klein,
she's really,
and his veganism.
She really is into that. Like she's wired into the online vegan.
Well, and there's a way to do this and there's a way not to do it. And the way not to do it is to run on stage and make a jerk of yourself because it just sets everyone else back.
Yeah, she's, I'm like, oh. I was kind of shocked. I got her a vegan t-shirt a couple of years ago for Christmas, and it was from PETA, and she had a real problem with PETA being on there because she doesn't like their tactics. And
she likes their website.
She does like their website, and she likes she does wear that shirt because it says vegan on it. Mm-hmm. But she is, and she does not wear leather, and she does not wear wool. Nope. She's very much an animal rights activist, and takes it very seriously, and does not do dairy. So she, I think she goes along with the politics of it. But it's interesting to watch our kids evolve in terms of what they expect from political action and what they don't. And I'm pretty much just letting them come to their own conclusions about a lot of things, you know?
Well, and she does activism in a way that I'm very proud of. She cooks tasty vegan meals.
Yes, she
does.
And
invites us to eat them, and they're good. And she's, batting. She has a high batting average when it comes to making vegan meals. And when you or I show a willingness to talk about animal cruelty, she has all the facts and figures and is ready to talk.
Yes, she does.
But she doesn't bludgeon people.
Right.
She just says, if you think of yourself as someone who is against cruelty, maybe you should think about, stopping meat in your diet.
Yeah.
It's bad for you. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for the earth. And on and on and on.
Yep.
She has all of the ammunition in her belt that she needs. She knows in depth what goes on factory farms.
Right.
And can tell you chapter and verse. But she doesn't. That's not what she drops on the table first. What she drops on the table first is
delicious macaroni and cheese.
Delicious vegan macaroni and cheese. Like, vegan. Wow, this is really good. Yeah, it is. And so we go to Food Fantasies and we shop there, and we're having
our
more
health food
and more
store is Food Fantasies. Yeah.
Yes. So I don't want to be at the principled conservative conference, the guy who dashing across the stage with a sign that says dairy must die. I want to be the guy dashing across the stage that says, remember Tom DeLay?
Yeah.
Anybody here got a fucking clue who the hell Tom DeLay was?
No.
Do you remember Strom Thurmond? Anybody, show of hands. Anyone here remembers Strom fucking Thurmond? Anybody remember Paul Ryan? You knew him. Hey, Charlie Sykes, you are personally responsible for his goddamn career in Wisconsin. Anyone remember who these people are? No, of course you don't.
Yeah.
Because they're the specter at your fucking little banquet here. They're the spirit hanging over this august proceeding, proving that your movement has been shit all along. And we all know it. I want to be that guy at the conference.
I did love how Nancy Pelosi did a signing ceremony for the coronavirus money.
Yes.
I mean, that was just in serious shade.
She's amazing. She didn't hold it up and, her signature, hold it up and look it around the room. But she did an amazing thing.
I really like her attitude towards the Democratic primary race, too, which is I'm fine with Bernie. I'm fine with Biden. I'm fine with either one of them. And she had a lot to say about women in politics yesterday because she's quite an expert in that. There is an article in The New Yorker, and I'm not going to quote it right. I'm not going to quote it at all, but we read it and discussed it this week about Abraham Lincoln and Thaddeus Stevens and how the radical Republicans who were the strong, radical anti-slavery wing of the Republican Party in Congress.
Yes, the abolitionists.
The abolitionists who Thaddeus Stevens wanted to arm slaves to fight their masters. He thought the government should do that. And there was a senator from Ohio who also put himself in charge of firing generals from Lincoln's army who were there for profit. And we're here to fight a war against the South. Let's go. That was it.
Yep.
So these radical Republicans were the ones who really won the war and won freedom for the slaves. And that Lincoln was really dragged, not kicking and screaming, but he was dragged toward the Emancipation Proclamation.
He was.
And that he would rather have preserved the Union without freeing one slave, because that's just too much change.
Right.
And so it really comforted me to read that, because I feel as though we are being led to a nominee, frankly, who is not my first choice, is not my second choice, and will be much more conciliatory toward Republicans than I want him to be. And then I think, okay, the squad is in the House. Nancy Pelosi's in charge of the House. Every person who is holding one of the 40 seats that we flipped in 2018 is going to be running for re-election in 2020. Mm-hmm. That includes AOC. That includes a whole lot of women. And those women are going to be signing the spending bills, voting on the spending bills coming out of the House. And I hope to God we take the Senate. By the way, Junior Dude, our son, who is a political science major in college and is a real vote counter. Let me put it that way. He really mm-hmm. gets it. And he was not too upset about Warren dropping out. He was very sanguine about it. You know, he's a Warren supporter and knocked on doors for Warren in Iowa. But he immediately kind of clicked over to, okay, where are the votes? What's happening? How are we going to get to where he wants to go? He's going to vote for Sanders in the Illinois primary. And he feels strongly that if we keep up the turnout numbers that we are, and the turnout in Virginia, particularly for the Virginia primary, was high. Some of our turnout numbers are better than 2016, and that is very good news.
It's incredibly encouraging. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
If we keep that up, if we're able to keep that up, the map for 2022 for the Senate is very positive for Democrats. There are a lot of retiring people who've already announced they're leaving. There's a change in demographics, which is terrific for us. You know, he even went so far as to say, look, it would be horrible for the country if Trump was reelected. But I'm telling you, the Senate will go blue if Trump's reelected in 2022. The Senate will be blue. Don't worry about it. The Senate will be blue.
Says Junior Dude.
Inevitably.
I trust his opinion.
Yeah, I do.
I trust his opinion. Mm-hmm.
Because the thing that worries him is if it's Biden or Sanders in the White House in 2020, which he wants, that we sleep on our laurels then. That we say, okay, Democratic president, we're all set. We can sit back. We don't have to think about politics for another 4 years. And the midterms go to people that Sean Hannity. It'll be 2010 again. You know, the people that Sean Hannity is screaming at will turn out and we won't. And we can't let that happen. So I hope we have changed. I know a lot of us want to go back to some sort of normalcy and not have to deal with being terrified about politics and ginned up on politics 24/7 all the time, mm-hmm. worried about it. Mm-hmm. It's got to become part of our DNA that we vote blue every time, every election, everywhere.
Yes, and encourage everyone we know to do that.
Yeah.
Raise our little ones to do that.
And we shouldn't need 4 more years of Donald Trump to do that. Mm-hmm. And you know, like I said, Junior Dude is not a neurotypical when he says, you know, if Trump gets reelected, we have a better chance of flipping the Senate 22 than if he doesn't. He just means that technically speaking, he's looking at his map. Yes.
He's our own Steve Kornacki. He's not making judgments.
A spectrum kid. Who is just looking at the map and saying, here's what turnout is like for people out of power in the White House. The turnout for the opposing party is higher. And he's right. That's true. So long story short.
I would remind people very briefly that Frederick Douglass started off despising Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, right.
I looked up a quote just to make sure I got it right, that his comment on Lincoln's inaugural address was that Lincoln was a little better than our worst fears.
Wow.
And just thought he was at the worst.
Yeah.
Just the worst. Just a craven, capitulating compromiser, mm-hmm. et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Where have I heard that before?
Which he absolutely was. And there is a tension built into our country and our politics.
Yeah.
Inflamed and laced into our DNA by race. And it just is. Mm-hmm. And there will always be people for whom no progress is fast enough.
Yeah.
And there will be other people for whom any progress is too much.
Yep.
And if you find yourself anywhere in between those poles, you're going to be hated by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I'm not talking about both sides do it. There is one, let me repeat this for the umpteenth time on this podcast. There is one political party in this country that has lost its goddamn mind.
Yeah.
That is absolutely despicable from top to bottom. There's nothing left in it worth saving, which leaves everyone else under one big fraying tent.
Which is horrible. Yeah.
Which it's horrible. Really horrible. It shouldn't be that way. There's a long ass list of things that I think shouldn't be. I mean, just start me off with the New York Times editorial, you know, op-ed page.
Right.
A lot of people shouldn't be there. They don't care what I think.
Right.
So saying that X or Y or Z should not exist is not really an option for people without power. It is true that this is the case, but it is also true that within our party of where all the same people went, we're going to gouge each other's eyes out, and we're going to gouge each other's eyes, and we're going to lock elbows, and we're going to hit each other in the face because we're crowded in together.
Mm-hmm.
We're all stuck in this one party, and there should be four parties.
Yeah.
But the reason for that, the overall reason for that, is that there's no relief valve for it because the only other viable party are full of goons and monsters
Nazis.
And racist and grifters and Nazis.
Yeah.
And none of us want that. I think I'm pretty safe to say that for the most craven moderate among us to the most radical revolutionary among us, none of us want that to be the future of our country, right?
Right.
We can all agree to that.
Right.
And the question then is, how do we achieve the goals that we all agree on? And I wrote a long post today, and I'm not going to repeat it, but it is a fundamental misunderstanding among us about what the actual goal of change really is.
I would pair what you wrote today with what was written in Wonkat. The owner of Wonkat wrote a really good article about Clean for Gene.
Yeah.
All of these people that got haircuts and put neckties on and went canvassing for Gene McCarthy in 1968.
Yep.
And they did it because they wanted the war to end.
They did. Yes.
And so they dressed like squares so they could talk to squares who were, you know, they might have personally felt that the people they were talking to were horrible capitulators and part of the middle class system, man. Yep. And I don't want to have to deal with them. But Eugene McCarthy got them to get their haircuts, not be a hippie, wear nice clothes and go door to door to explain that, no, Senator Eugene McCarthy is a U.S. senator who simply wants to end the war in Vietnam.
Yes.
And they did that so that they could end the war in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. That's what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And the goal was, let's have this policy goal and we will sacrifice our hippiedom and our hair and our whatever to communicate this idea.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so Wonkat today is saying, look, and the way she put it was rather insulting to the Chapo guys.
Uh-huh.
But she said, you know, please put on your little Lord Fauntleroy manners and be polite to the Warren people. Be polite to former Hillary people. Be polite to other burners.
Right.
Be polite to Biden people and communicate why you want the policies that Bernie Sanders wants. And, you know, it's a long article, and I highly recommend both your article to kind of explain the schism that's going on between revolutionaries and moderates and the explainer on Wonkat of communication and building a communication set that allows you to share ideas and get people on your side. I don't know if it'll work or not with everyone, but
it doesn't quite rhyme, but I would recommend Stay Sunny for Sanders.
Ooh, wow.
Just try not to be an asshole online if you're advocating to get someone elected and you're talking to someone who's undecided.
Yeah.
If you come to the conversation assuming that the reason you're not backing my candidate must be you're acting in bad faith or you're stupid, there's no way you're going to convince me because it comes off you like a reek, like a stink.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy. I want you to succeed. I want you to win. I want those policies to be enacted.
Yeah. I want health care for everybody. I really do. Yes, I really do. Yes, yes.
And I really would like people to understand something about human nature and how you actually go about the job of persuading people, because that really is your job.
And I'm more terrified because here's the deal. Most Sanders voters in 2016 did go out and vote for Hillary. They did.
Absolutely, they did.
I think online is blowing a lot of this up.
It is.
Number two, some of them are simply Russians or bots or whatever, and I get that. It does not scare me that online vitriol is going to frighten away the Democratic base from voting for Bernie Sanders if he's the nominee. I don't believe that. I think people will vote for Sanders if he's the nominee. I know I will. In fact, I won't even be grumpy about it.
I'll be sunny for Sanders.
I'll be happy to vote for Sanders in the general election. Okay. So the thing that terrifies me more than the fact that online people being funny or being jocular or whatever, however you want to put it, is going to turn off Sanders voters. The thing that scares me more is if Sanders wins and all of a sudden some voters don't get everything they wanted immediately on January 20th.
Yes.
Well, and I don't know how to communicate. Again, I don't know how to communicate to folks that you can't always get what you want on.
Well, you know.
You should go and read Bernie Sanders' bill because it isn't M4A now. It's not. If he passes it, great. And it will radically improve. It will radically change our healthcare system. And it will provide more coverage for more people. It will. So, but it doesn't do it tomorrow. That's my point. And I'm worried about how expectations are being managed here. And I'm not liking what I'm seeing. So.
And I'm afraid the I'm going to vote for John Anderson option is off the table.
Well, and I'm still thinking about it because, you know, in the aftermath of the anger of her dropping out, I want to still vote for Warren. And now I'm thinking, is that a John Anderson vote? And I'm not. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still thinking about it.
It's a primary.
It is a primary. And That's true. John Anderson was a general election vote. Yes.
A general election vote. And when it comes to November of this year, I will have under my belt many weeks, if not longer, of working on behalf of the Democratic nominee for Senate, because we do have, and although he's going to just say
it. Dick Durbin. Yeah.
Dick Durbin for president and for Congress. And I will do so unashamedly and cheerfully.
And we will have lawn signs for each candidate in our front yard. Yes.
You do not need to worry about our support in the fall. Yeah. Right now, we are trying to figure out what to do with our one vote during a primary when we both believe that the best candidate is no longer in the race. Mm-hmm. And
may I say one other thing?
You can say as much as you want. You're the sound editor. The major
disagreement I have with Chapo Trap House is selling episodes. And tone and everything. Their show is a completely different format from ours, including a different audience from ours mostly. But they do one episode for free a week, and then they have one behind a paywall. And we don't do that. And we don't do that because I consciously don't believe in it. I don't believe in hiding content from listeners. I just don't. And so that's my big disagreement with them. And we sacrifice income for that. I know we do. I know if we had the time and energy to put together two episodes and put one behind a paywall, we'd make more money. I know that. But I just have an aversion to that. So, you know.
And I just do whatever my wife says. So
let's do Roundup.
Shall we? I do want to mention one other thing. The week before last, you might remember, was the when we handed out the No One More Oppressed Than Me award went to Rod Blagojevich. Yeah. And last week it went to Mark Halperin. This week I'd like to give it jointly to Chris Matthews and the Morning Joe crew.
Oh, Lord.
Chris Matthews, who got sacked by MSNBC for inappropriate behavior, and I would argue 30 years of being obnoxious and wrong and loud and shouty.
And it was Junior Dude has said to me a couple of weeks ago, it really is time for him to retire. He's 75. And I went, you know, 75 is a good time to retire. He should retire. Yeah.
I'm reminded of Krusty the Clown, you know, resigning from comedy. Why now, Rusty? Why not 20 years ago? But you can hear, and the reason I'm including him in this list is A, I would like it on the record that Chris Matthews, this was the week that Chris Matthews got fired/resigned on the air, just basically dropped the microphone in Steve Kornacki's lap and walked out.
Or Steve Kornacki, yeah.
Nothing but class, man. But you can hear the gears grinding with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski as they get up on their hind legs to talk about cancel culture and how unfair it was to Chris Matthews. Because part of them wants to be considered woke.
Yeah.
And they want to talk about accountability, and they want to talk about, you know, holding people to high standards. They want to talk about Me Tooism and so on and so forth. They want to be seen as that. But you can see their obvious horror when it happens to one of their own friends.
Right, right.
Accountability is for other people. And when it comes,
in our industry, in our building,
not in our family. And when it's happened now, you know, to a number of people who work for NBC and or MSNBC, and you can just see every time they get real uncomfortable when the accountability police come for them.
Did they get up on their hind legs for Melissa Harris Perry, though?
Oh, Melissa Harris who? Never heard of her. Uh-huh. Don't know who that might be.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought so. Let's do a news roundup.
All right.
All right. All the corona stuff. We're going to talk about that. Coronavirus stuff. The White House prohibited audio and video at a coronavirus briefing. Yeah. Yes, they did.
Donald Trump has doubled down on his debunked lie that somehow Barack Obama is to blame for lack of coronavirus testing kits.
Trump called the coronavirus the Democrats' new hoax and accused them of, quote, politicizing, unquote, the deadly virus.
And we mentioned Nancy Pelosi forced Donald Trump to adequately fund the American coronavirus response efforts and then had a signing ceremony to rub his face in it.
We are recording this before we figure out. There's rumors that Mick Mulvaney's going to resign. We don't know about that yet. So shrug your shoulders. I don't know. But White House Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney played down the deadly coronavirus that has caused U.S. stock markets to plummet, telling top conservatives that wall-to-wall news coverage of the disease is a ploy to hurt his boss, President Donald Trump, and advised Americans to turn off their television sets.
Yeah. Ignore it.
He should start with his boss.
Yeah. Well, and this is not a one-off. Trump's top advisor, economic advisor, drunk Larry Kudlow, who apparently is just drunk all the time now, says American workers should, quote, stay at home. Stay at work despite the coronavirus. He was very insistent about that. And he was on CNBC, and the anchor pointed out that the former FDA commissioner has criticized the administration for doing exactly this sort of thing, encouraging people to do things they shouldn't do, which helps spread the virus. But, you know, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Trump touted the positive impact of coronavirus. It's affecting the airline business. People are staying in our country, and they're shopping, and they're using our hotels. So from that same point, I think there's a positive impact.
Yeah, because it's always a spin, man. I didn't bankrupt a casino. I created jobs in the unemployment market. Donald Trump told his work wife, Sean Hannity, that he thinks the World Health Organization estimates of the coronavirus's death rate is fake news. Quote, I think the 3.4% number is really a false number. Now, this is just my hunch, because you know how accurate that shit is. But based on a lot of conversations with voices in his head, personally, I'd say the number is way under 1%.
Trump's Secretary of Defense warned commanders not to make any decisions related to the coronavirus that might surprise the White House.
Uh-huh.
Mark Esper issued the directive via a conference call, telling commanders deployed overseas that they must first clear any decisions related to protecting their troops with the White House.
Now, this is some straight up fascist shit. This is ordering your troops to not protect themselves in order to spare the dear leader from embarrassment. That really is Stalinist Hitler shit. Now, remember the GOP freaking out and calling for Obama to be impeached for trading five Taliban prisoners for Bo Bergdahl? Well, Donald Trump has signed an agreement to negotiate an agreement with the Taliban, which would release 5,000 Taliban prisoners. Now, at around the time that Ivanka, his daughter, was tweeting Rumi poems to the Taliban about a place beyond rightness and wrongness, and one day we'll meet there in blissful ecstasy, which I swear to God she actually did, the Taliban were tearing up their pre-agreement and resuming attacks on the Afghan government.
Which Donald Trump responded to with, no fair.
No fair. You said you wouldn't do that. Just no fair. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying the situation isn't fraught and complicated and anyone's going to look bad and I want us the hell out of that country. But the worst possible person you can put in charge of anything from foreign policy to controlling response to an epidemic is Donald fucking Trump.
He has no credibility with anyone in the world.
No, at all.
At all. And on that note, CNN fact checked Donald Trump's Fox News town hall and found he lied at least 13 times in 1 hour.
And to calm everyone down, Donald Trump abruptly canceled the planned visit to CDC headquarters in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's going to calm everybody down.
Sure,
Trump told his Fox News audience, quote, "We'll be cutting," unquote, entitlements like Medicare and Social Security.
And in more War on Science news, an Interior Department official inserted wingnut bullshit about climate change in the agency's official scientific reports, including debunked claims that increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is actually beneficial.
And he wasn't fired.
No.
The Trump administration added a new litmus test that candidates for political appointments must now complete. Candidates applying for a job in the Trump administration have to explain what part of Trump's campaign message most appeals to them and why.
It's his big pouty lips. I just can't resist. The Bernie Sanders bad lip reading Obama ad kicked up some kind of controversy this week.
I thought it was funny that on MSNBC last night, the Bernie Sanders Obama ad and the Biden Obama ad were back to back during Rachel Maddow's interview with Elizabeth Warren.
Well, and the reason you can run whatever ad you want, but it was cut together with pieces of conversations, and a lot of that was taken out of context, which happens in political ads. What makes it more problematic for anyone who's on, let's say, the internet, is his national campaign co-chair, Nina Turner, just a few weeks ago was mocking other candidates for using the black president as a prop, as a crutch. Mm-hmm. No, you got to stand on your own 2 feet. How dare you use Barack Obama as a crutch? Get out there and run your own campaign. And then Super Tuesday happens, and suddenly there's Bernie Sanders, my very good friend Barack Obama, and I agree. And it was like, okay, I get it. You're up against the wall. You're doing what you can. But please, if you have that in the can and you might use it, you might want to think about not telling your campaign co-chair to go out in public and explain to people that anyone who runs that sort of ad is bullshitting them. That would have been a good thing to think through before you did it.
3 years ago, Jared Kushner's stake in a digital platform for smaller investors and commercial properties called Cadre was worth $5 million. He just sold it for $25 to $50 million after it benefited from Opportunity Zone tax breaks that Kushner himself pushed for.
Yeah. In California's 25th congressional district primary race, Cenk Uygur and George Papadopoulos both lost, and they lost massively. So damn you, deep state. Damn you.
I think that just goes to show you that in congressional races, it is really hard to be a carpetbagger.
Oh, yeah.
Statewide races in New York, especially, they're used to voting for someone outside the state, you know, who comes in to run. But the more local you get, the less likely it is that someone who comes in from the outside or appears to be an outsider is going to win.
This is why I don't run for the Senate in Illinois. Just, you know.
There's all kinds of reasons Driftglass doesn't run for the Senate in Illinois.
True.
Okay. The Supreme Court agreed to take up a legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act during its term starting in October. Surprise!
And A coalition of 19 states are suing to block the Trump administration's looting of $3.8 billion from the Pentagon budget to build Trump's stupid border wall.
Also, a federal judge is now asking to look at the unredacted Mueller report to find out if Bill Barr lied about it. And, of course, Bill Barr did lie about it. So we'll be interested to see how that unfolds. We already talked about J.B. Pritzker.
We did, J.B. But we're glad to have, you know what we're really glad to have in Illinois? A Democratic governor. What he's working on now is trying to get through a restructuring of the tax system here, which is written into our Constitution. So it's really hard to do. To have a progressive income tax so that you pay more percentage-wise the more income you have.
And you know who's going to pay a lot of taxes under that plan?
Pritzker.
J.B. Pritzker, yes. Yeah,
but so is Rauner, so, you know, I'm okay with that.
Both sides. Okay. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. But this week's internet pet is Elizabeth Warren's dog, Bailey, and his burrito.
Yes.
The burrito looks to have been freshly poured, you know, so... We are going to use the term Bailey's burrito around the house for that thing we just have to have, no matter the consequences. You know, you got donuts? I'm going to Bailey's burrito that thing. I don't care if it is Lent.
Okay. All right.
Hey, like I said, Bailey's burrito is probably freshly poured. We have our fake sponsor, Freshly Poured Cat Food. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store direct, your cat or dog will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the only food they eat is freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And we want to thank MSNBC.
Yes, we do.
We want to thank MSNBC for putting Bailey Dog D Massachusetts on the Chiron. We use that screen grab for our picture of Bailey. You can visit Bailey at our Facebook page or website or all over the internet. And you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union's letter on the air unless you say otherwise. And Driftglass, it's about time we did another letter show.
I think you're right, Blue Gal. You know? I think you're right.
Now it's Super Tuesday is over for a lot of people. We'd love to hear from you about what your plans are for the general election, who you're working for down ballot. Let us know. We'd love to hear from
you. Just go on and put in the subject line, letter show.
Letter show. Because, so we know to look for those emails. Right. Thank you. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job and a labor of love. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Our PayPal, postal address information, there's merch, and all kinds of good stuff at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, in honor of Daylight Savings Time this weekend, the Internet Kitties plan to sleep right through Daylight Savings Time.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.